the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked.
In this March 2016 edition, it is a great pleasure to welcome Krista McAtee. Am I saying your last name properly, Krista?
That's perfect. Yes, Krista McAtee. That's it.
Wonderful. Krista has been an educator for about 20 years. She has taught almost everything from preschool to high school, and she is now teaching elementary teacher candidates at Sonoma State University, in the credentialing program. Presently, she is spending most of her time facilitating learning experiences for teachers in the area of mathematics. In her free time, she creates opportunities for youth to recognize their power to heal the world through transformative travel. Transformative travel creates experiences for international restorative justice and offers youth an opportunity to heal the scars created by war. Hello, Krista, and
Hello.
Thank you for joining us.
I'm very excited to be here.
Oh, I'm just so impressed, and it's just such a privilege to know that teachers like you exist. And I loved reading that you grew up in as a river rat chasing frogs and turtles on the Russian River in Healdsburg.
Yes.
Is that very, that's true, right?
Yes, absolutely. The river is my home. I still, you know, the river is my sanctuary for sure. Absolutely.
Right. And then it's there that you develop the strong desire to learn the Spanish language and learn about the Latino cultures in the Healdsburg Elementary Schools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was in bilingual programs there, and all my friends were Latina, and I had great bilingual teachers, and yeah, and developed that passion for really kind of social justice, I would say, you know, in Fitch Mountain Elementary School with my second grade teacher. Absolutely.
Right. And then, so then you completed your BA at Sonoma State University in Chicano Latin Studies.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right. So before we start talking about what I really want to focus on is the transformative travel, because it is just so, to me, just so powerful. And I want to establish, you know, your background in developing this transformative travel. Can you talk about the vision of transformative travel when you started and the first group you took to, was it El Salvador?
El Salvador was the first, and I actually traveled with another Sonoma County person who was bringing a group down, and I brought my three children down to El Salvador with David Carlson and a nonprofit organization called ESNA Village Network. And that stands for El Salvador North America Village Network. And I got to see just how incredibly transformative that experience was for youth, and kind of recognize that those kind of opportunities are mostly only accessible to kids who have the privilege here and the resources here in the United States enough to travel. And I wanted to create those opportunities for as many kids as possible, because I saw how transformative and how empowering it was for kids to recognize that by simply being there in another country and listening to the stories of people who have survived war and loss, many times people said things like, the fact that you're here, the fact that you're here to listen gives me hope for the future and helps heal my heart. And when I watched the faces of youth hear that, it was so powerful. Like, just being here without doing anything, just being here helps give hope for the future and heal hearts. Like, that was so powerful.
Yes. Yes, very powerful. So are there other challenges?
Challenges for getting students down there, or
all the way around, for getting students down there and for addressing their concerns and for getting people to understand what you're doing?
Well, I guess one of the biggest challenge is getting funding for kids to go down, and for because I want it to be accessible to anybody who wants to do it, and I don't want costs to be a barrier for a child whose family can't afford to pay for them to go. And many times when families can't afford to pay, the kids don't have aunts and uncles and neighbors and everybody else who can support them. So we've done tons of fundraising, and that takes, a lot of time, a lot of bake sales, and my mom and aunt have baked thousands of cookies, and we always have managed. So basically what I decided to do was form this organization, Transformative Travel, so that I could do something besides bake sales to raise the funds and maybe apply for grants or things like that. So that's a big piece of the challenge.
Right.
Helping parents understand, especially Latino parents, understand that I am taking their babies to another country, and they are my children while we are there, and I will protect them with all of my heart and soul, and that could have been a challenge, I think, but I'm working with parents whose kids were in my class in first grade or fifth grade or in high school, and the word kind of travels, and parents speak to parents about how powerful it is and how, I'm basically a mother for their kids when they're out of the country, and they take a big leap of faith and send their babies off into another country that's not a safe country to travel in, but we're well cared for.
Yes.
Well protected.
Yes, it's just so beautiful. It's awe-inspiring and thrilling. And so there's the invitation, you put out there to students and families to join you. And you're empowering the community by doing this. You're definitely empowering the students, and the communities that you visit. You're really making an impact, because your focus isn't so much on bilingual education as it is on the cultures, right?
Yeah, it's really about solidarity. It's about we talk a lot about the difference between, like, we're not there to help, in quotation marks. We're there to walk with the people. We're there to learn together, to grow together. So we do actually help, like, construction stuff, but we're doing it together with the community. So, for example, three summers ago, the community that we visited three summers ago is called Las Trincheras, which translates to the trenches. It was a community that was formed when people were escaping the hills and the mountains and the battles, and they found this little place, the trenches, Las Trincheras, where they could kind of create their own refuge. So the average income in that community is $1 a day, and there's school from first grade or kindergarten through sixth grade, and they had this old kind of falling apart church that preschoolers were going to, that they were trying to create space so moms could go to work, and the community really wanted a preschool. so we started, you know, digging the foundation and pouring concrete. And we did it with parents, with moms and dads, and sometimes even 3 or 4 year olds. They're helping us shoveling and moving rocks and things like that. And over the course of the year, then the community and other groups will come in behind us and continue the work together. But it's about, you know, it's about that camaraderie and learning from one another and learning with one another.
Right.
So it's kind of a full picture.
Yes, and it's a beautiful illustration of don't tell me,
yes.
You know, let's do it.
Yes.
You know, do it with me.
Yes, and it's not us saying, you guys need a school. We're going to come build you a school. It's what are the things that you could benefit your community, and how can we help support you in creating those things? So this year we're going to build a 7th grade classroom because the government has agreed to provide a teacher for another room if they had a room. So we're going to build a classroom.
How fabulous.
So kids can go to 7th grade, yeah.
So yeah. What is this one of the future trips you've planned, and what other trips have you planned?
Yeah. So, in July, I will take a group to El Salvador, and we will build that classroom. And I am going, actually, on the 18th, I fly with another nonprofit organization called Seeds of Learning. And we will go to Nicaragua for spring break, and I'm taking 21 students from Sonoma Valley High School to Nicaragua. And in that community, the children have been going to school in one of those old metal, like, transportation containers.
Yeah.
So it's hot, and it's rusty, and there's lead, and it's just absolutely not an ideal situation for education. So we're going to be the first group who've ever volunteered in this community outside of Tipitapa. And we're going to start the foundation for a classroom that will be their school, their community classroom, their first classroom.
That's so fantastic. Now, which high school is that the students are from?
These students are from Sonoma Valley High School. So out in the town of Sonoma.
Yeah, that's really just so fantastic. And
yes.
Go ahead.
And then I'm going to Kenya. So then we have a group in June going to Kenya, and these are students from Santa Rosa and from Sonoma, so kind of a combination. And actually, on that Kenya trip, I have 5 teachers accompanying us. So there will be 8 students and 5 teachers.
And is the Kenya trip a high schoolers?
Mostly high school, 1 7th grader, and the rest are high schoolers. Yes.
Oh, that's just. And do these kids and are these kids also coming from families that wouldn't normally be able to travel like this?
So all the trips, I really I want it to be open to anybody, and I also don't want it to be just like exclusively low-income kids or kids who are marginalized. I want it to be open to whoever wants to participate. Basically, I think it's a growing experience for all of us, and it's also kind of a bridging experience when I have for example, last summer we had many Latino kids and a handful of Anglo kids and, you know, different socioeconomic levels. So I really want it to be a bridge, because then we come back and in our community they're connected. Those kids go through a lot of bonding while we're there, and they're like family when they come home. So it's both. It's both kids who can pay for it, and those families pay for it. And then there are families who can't pay for any of it. And even I've taken kids who I've helped fill out their passport because they don't have anybody, passport application. They don't have anybody at home who writes and who can fill out a passport application. And I've picked them up and taken them to the post office. So we've done, and paid for even, the whole not only the trip, but paid for their passport and paid for some supplies that they need, bug spray and sunscreen. And so it really depends on the needs of the kids.
Yes, yes, it just sounds beautiful. And it sounds like that is beautiful, that there's a bridge there, so which yep. will hopefully encourage communication in because there has been so much of tearing apart really the idea of creating a classroom where there are children from all socioeconomic groups, which was really the goal a long time ago that we had in education. Right. Before yes. these drastic measures have been taken.
And schools are more segregated now than they ever have been.
Yes, they are. That's what I'm saying. It's wonderful, yeah. you know, that you're addressing all these issues that are so crucial right now. I noted on the website, which is 3ws.transformative-travel.org, that there's this wonderful video. And it's really created by students, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it's their voices. It's their ideas. Absolutely.
That was another just really incredible experience for me, because so often you have adults talking about, you know, experiences that kids had or talking about. And here you have the kids, their actual voices. And they're the voices of not this little fraction of the population of children that have been deemed worthy of making, you know, conversation or being, you know, a speaking, but they're the students who actually went. The students who are actually in the experience. And so I just commend you so much for that. It's just beautiful.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I try to create opportunities for the kids to speak about their experiences, because anybody who hears the kids talk about it, to hear, you know, a 15 or 16 or 17-year-old talk about how transformed they have been by seeing and playing with kids who have nothing, and also just kind of their recognition of you know, how incredibly fortunate they are, and kind of a recognition of, wow, you know, like, I thought things were tough in my life, you know, but I have, you know, three meals a day. Or I'm a sophomore and I'm complaining about having to go to school, but I have the opportunity to go to school. The kids that we meet down there, you know, the community that we work in, there's school until sixth grade, and that's it. Unless your parents have enough money to pay $1.25 a day for transportation, you're not going to go to school. And when the average income is $1 a day, it's very unlikely that kids are going to be able to go to school. And so, you know, our students build relationships with kids down there and really fall in love with them, and then kind of recognize how incredibly different it is to live in El Salvador or in another place like that than what their lives are. In fact, last summer my students decided they were going to bring the kids from Las Trincheras back this summer, to stay with us. And they said, we're going to raise all the money. We'll pay for their air flight and for their visas, and they can stay in our homes, and we can take them to different places, and we can show them around. And they were all very excited and motivated about bringing the youth here. And then we started talking to different people about trying to figure out how to make that possible. And we recognized the fact that, first of all, it is virtually impossible for a child who has no income and whose family has no, you know, almost no income to get a visa to come here in the first place, even if the whole thing was paid for. And then secondly, really, it would be damaging for them to bring them here and say, look at all of these schools, look at what my school is like, look at these universities that I can choose to go to. There are all these opportunities. Now we're going to take you back to El Salvador where you can't even go to seventh grade.
Yes.
And that was a huge, like, for all of, for even adults, you know, like we got excited about the kids idea. And then even after going for 5 years, not recognizing that, you know, like that depth of the privilege that we have just having been born, you know, within the United States.
Yes, that's a sort of a protecting their self-concept.
Yes, yes.
And I understand that, and it, because it isn't the traditional exchange programs that were, you know, happening when I was in school many years ago in public school, which were great, but of course public education was great then as well. It's so sad what's happened in public education, and I just commend you once again for finding a way to engage students in a process where they learn that simply by caring, as you put it, they can make a difference.
Yeah.
It's
absolutely.
It's really fantastic. I can't help but to reflect on, you know, the incredible achievement that you have made. I mean, you teach in public schools part-time. You teach at Sonoma State.
Yeah.
And you teach in the credentialing program. And Sonoma State has an outstanding teacher credentialing program. I can vouch for that because I have had know people who have been through that process, and the person who led me to you, Kathy Morris, you know, is a member of the Hermeneutic Institute for Holistic Health and Education, which produces education now, and she led me to you, and so I'm eternally grateful.
Yes. Yes.
So, you know, I know how great the teacher credentialing program is there, also having had students who went through the process. And one of the things that really concerns me right now in the educational community is the kind of bashing, the teacher bashing and the bashing of our institutions, our teacher credentialing institutions around the country. It's just so disheartening to me. I know that places like Finland, who have had such success, when they're asked, well, what did you do? They said, oh, well, we went to America to their teacher credentialing programs, and we learned this all.
Right, right.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, and I think one thing that we do differently than Finland is, and countries that are really high performing is just valuing teachers. The, you know, teachers' educations are paid for. They don't have tons of student loans when I'm still paying my student loans 20 years later. They don't, they're highly paid. They have much more training, much more time for training. They have much more time for planning. They have, so in the United States, the research and what we know about education is phenomenal. Our value of education is where it's very different. Valuing educators, is very different. Linda Darling Hammond, wrote Education in a Flat World, and she does a lot of comparing Finland and you know, other countries with the United States, and that's one of the huge differences is just the value that goes into all of those pieces: teacher education, teacher salary, planning time, prep time, collaboration time. Teachers in the United States feel less valued, feel undervalued.
And they are.
They should be a huge priority, yeah.
They are. I mean, the bashing, the absolute defamation of character.
Mm-hmm.
And then the saddest thing of all, the two huge teachers' unions not coming out and addressing this, not coming out strongly for the teachers, and let alone coming out against policies which do not place the good of the student before the tests. This is just, to me, it's so sad. And I know that the teachers' unions are, the teachers are so upset because the teachers' unions supported Hillary Clinton without asking for a vote from, how undemocratic is that? From the body, you know. So education is just, and all the press, the media is a frenzy to demonize the teachers. It's so sad. You know, I'm going to be 74 this year, Krista. Mm. And
wow,
so
congratulations.
Thank you. So when I came to California, education was free. You could get a higher education was free in the California system. It was so fantastic. Public schools were second only to New York at that time in California.
Wow.
It was a golden time, and we were so excited when we moved here because we knew we wanted to have children, and and we wanted them to go to public school. We believed in public school. I still believe in public schools. That's why I do education now, because I want to inform. I'm trying to empower parents and teachers to take it back, and it's very hard to do without media support. Thank goodness for the media, the net. The web, because that's how we're informing each other. So, I can say it's a really sad time in education right now, and to see that you have this really beautiful, positive experience that you can offer to people who just really don't have the opportunity, and also to communities who have been suffering under wars, many of which our government has
supported in big ways.
Help support, and which is another just such a sad, sad thing. So these communities are getting this caring from transformative travel. And the students involved are getting an experience of a lifetime that will be with them, I am sure, the rest of their lives.
I've taken kids to speak at, I'm belonging to the National Association of Multicultural Educators, and I've taken students to speak about their experiences a few times. And my son, when he we were in Arizona, I think, and he saw this documentary on Desmond Tutu, and his reaction was just phenomenal. He said he 11, and he's like, "How come I don't know about Desmond Tutu? Why have I never learned in school about Desmond Tutu? I know all about Nelson Mandela. How come they haven't told me about Desmond Tutu? And do you notice that the people who were asking for their rights were being called guerrillas, just like in El Salvador? What's that about?" And I just love the fact that young people can kind of look at the world through a different lens. Because, one of the things that we do when we're in El Salvador is we sit in the living room of some of the guerrilla leaders, and we listen to their stories, and they take us behind their house in the hills and show us the big craters where bombs fell on schools, and talk about the funding from the United States government and the training that the soldiers from El Salvador went to in Florida, in Fort Lauderdale, to come back and and massacre people in villages, like whole villages at a time. And we listen, really sit and listen to the stories. And oftentimes some, you know, like a parent or two will come along with us who are in their, you know, 40s. And they are blown away because they were alive during the war. And what they saw from the media was 180 degrees different than what they experienced walking on the streets of El Salvador.
Yes, I know. It's the regime change.
Right.
That is being perpetuated in our name.
Mm-hmm.
Is yes. Just devastating. And as a child, you know, of the 60s, I know we never would have gotten out of Vietnam if it hadn't have been for the media and the photographs. And so you see, all of that is being suppressed in our culture. And it's a time to be strong, but it's also a time to get out and speak out, in my opinion, and yeah. to not accept. And I see that in a very positive way, with all the love, caring, and compassion, you are doing the same thing. You are not accepting.
Yeah. Well, and people say when we go there, we've had people ask us, with all of the media about how dangerous, for example, El Salvador is, and we're facing the same thing with, you know, talking about going to Kenya this summer. But you know, leaders of communities have said, why are you here if it's so dangerous? And we're sitting, you know, in a school with a group of kids, and how do we, you know, my student said, because you're here. You're here, so of course we want to be here. We want to be here with you and support you. And so many people say, you know, oh, you know, El Salvador, you know, is, you know, one of the most dangerous places in the world to be right now. But there are children who are going to school every day, you know, and there are people who are, there's an organization called Pro Búsqueda that has a relationship with UC Berkeley, and they are finding children. There, over 2,000 children were kidnapped and disappeared during the war and sold for adoption in the United States and Europe. And they are doing, UC Berkeley is doing the genetic testing and helping reunite families with their children that were taken out of their arms during the war. And we sit and listen to the stories, and people talk about their experiences getting their little brother pulled out of their arms. And,
oof. Right. Very heavy. Very heavy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to have to keep your spirit strong just to hear these stories and to deal with the realities that are being shielded from so much of the public. And kudos to Berkeley. I'm not surprised because they always step up to the plate. And I just don't know how long universities can continue. I know that a lot of the research that they do is for, you know, they get these grants from big corporations, and they do this research, and then if they don't come up with the conclusions that those corporations want, that research is the property of that corporation, not the property of the professor or student who did the research. And wow. And so it's confiscated and, you know, and kept from the public. Project Censored goes into this quite a bit. It was stationed there, I think, Project Censored at Sonoma State University. I don't know if it still is, because I know that Sonoma State University has also gone through some major transitions in terms of their structure there. But another thing I was wondering is, when you visit these countries, do you also see the devastation from the extraction of the natural resources in those areas.
Oh yeah, but yes, absolutely. And we see, you know, like everything, for example, is covered in either corn or coffee. And that's, you know, like all of the rest, everything else has been cut, you know. And one of the things, one of the projects that we do when we're down there is we help, we deliver eco cocinas. They're like little, ecological, stoves that have been designed by engineers in El Salvador, to burn about a tenth, you know, like a seventh to a tenth of the wood that it would normally take to heat up, for example, a pot of beans. And they are much safer as far as like less, air pollution because of smoke, less, burns, so less lung disease, less, so we, get donations for eco cocinas and we bring those into people's homes. And, so that's one of the things that we do to help out down there. There are so many different projects we do. There's a woman, who is in charge of, she's part of the education ministry and she's working to, bring, literacy to everybody. Her goal is to have everybody in El Salvador be literate. So she has these mobile libraries that she takes up into the mountains and they teach, adults and kids to read up in the mountains. But they've found, and we've supported them with bringing books down in the past and other things, and they found that there are a lot of people who can't see well. So their latest thing has been, she asked us to come this summer with as many pairs of glasses. People have their prescription glasses, and then they just, you know, their prescription changes, so they just put the old glasses in a drawer. But they take glasses, suitcases full of glasses up into the mountains and, you know, try on different glasses on people until they find one that fits. And the people are like, wow, I can see. And, they're, you know, so they leave glasses and then that helps with the reading and the literacy rates. And so, one of our goals is to bring, well, more books and, in Spanish and then glasses, for Connie, who's part of this, education ministry. And then there's a organization, called Arte para la Paz. So it's like art for peace. So it's a center and they are teaching children how to, they're kind of healing, I guess, through art, through, music and art. And
well,
they have kids. Yeah, they have kids who, for example, one of the things that Sister Peggy runs this organization, she said to the kids in our group that we all have trauma in our lives, and it's just different trauma. And she said one of the traumas that you have in the United States is you have so many options. You have so many things to decide from. What school do I go to? What clothes do I wear? What am I going to eat? Who am I going to, you know, there's just so many possibilities and options, and those options become really overwhelming and stressful.
Those options become obstacles.
Yeah, and she said, but the kids here, one of their traumas is they have no options. They have no options. So one of the things that they do is they're building orchestras, and they're have this amazing music and helping empower kids through music. So I'd love to bring down, when we pack all of our stuff in 2 weeks into one carry-on. So each of us bring one carry-on with our stuff for the week and then one checked bag or two sometimes of donations. So we bring things down. I would love to bring, you know, a bunch of iPads for the youth. There's this group of youth in Las Trincheras who are organizing. They're really kind of, they don't have schools past sixth grade, but they are kind of the heart of the community in Las Trincheras, and they have gathered money and donations and got this big oven. It's a and it's in one of the community members' homes, and they make pizza and they sell pizza and they have these different events, and they do celebrations for the whole community. And they're interested in opening like an internet cafe. And they could, if they did that, then they could charge a very small amount for using the computers and the internet, but that could help sustain their programs and then give access to, you know, technology to, you know, the rest of the world through the internet to members of their community. But this is all run by, you know, like 12, 14-year-olds to 22-year-olds in the community. It's
wow.
Very cool.
Oh, and is this the one that's called, what is this one called?
So they are La Red Juventil, which is like the net, the youth net.
The youth net.
Of Las Trincheras.
And then there's another one that's about art that you mentioned.
Yeah, that's El Centro de Arte para la Paz, the Center of Art for Peace.
Oh, wow. Oh, this is so exciting. I just, could you possibly send me the names of both of those that you mentioned so that I could add them to the promotion that I'll be sending out when we launch this interview, because it's just so exciting and it's just not it's not just readily available out there.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you so much,
yeah.
Krista.
Yeah.
Now, I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about your family. You have how many children of your own?
I have three children who actually are adopted from the foster care system in Sonoma County.
Uh-huh.
So I have an 18-year-old and a 16-year-old and a 13-year-old.
Oh, how!
And they have traveled with me many times.
and boys, girls.
So the oldest two are girls, and my baby is a boy.
Oh, how beautiful!
Yeah. Yes.
That is so wonderful. It always is inspiring to me when a person chooses not to have their children their own biological children, that they provide homes for children who wouldn't otherwise have them in their community.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing that. I've always felt that teaching is a lot like that, you know.
Yes, yes.
And our school, Melville Montessori School, of course, was in my home.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was open to a lot of children. But, of course, it was also important to create boundaries in that situation. And I'm grateful for the training that I had in teaching, you know, learning how to do those boundaries, give those boundaries as a show of respect and not of, you know, keeping people away. So that's really interesting. Now, and so they've traveled with you, you say?
Yeah, my youngest two have, for example, have gone, this summer will be their sixth year in El Salvador. So they started when they were 7, 11, and 13.
Oh, 14, wow. What an incredible wealth of information. I know when I first made the choice, when we first made the choice to take our children out of public school and homeschool, and we could see that it was coming because my husband was teaching in the public system at university level, and we could see that it was coming, that they were moving from, you know, to this business model in education and, you know, away from the goal of the humanities. It was a hard choice, but when we did that, I got my Montessori training, and I did a lot of work in Jung and Jungian therapy, and at that time it was like, you know, if we traveled, if we just took our four boys, who were all 10 and under at the time, and we traveled, they could get an incredible education. And, you know, we would stop, you know, you could stop occasionally. And I read a lot about this, get more books, you know, more tools, maps and things, you know, as you went along and, you know, meet people and do this experience. What a fantastic, you know, education it would be. And I do think that it is probably the very best kind of an education. So you're providing this experience for children who really would never have that option.
Right. And another thing is, like, a lot of people do this kind of, you know, volunteer service for their, you know, for college transcripts or whatever. And the kids who you know, can't afford $2,500 just don't have access to that. So I want them to have that access, absolutely. And I feel like, yes, I mean, there are things that you learn sitting in the classroom or in the home of a guerrilla commander, or just, you know, riding on the bus and talking to the people from El Salvador with us that are such important life lessons that are difficult to learn in a classroom that is all about pacing. And all about, you know, like following somebody else's guideline of when you have to, you know, ask whichever question you have to ask and things like that.
Right. It's almost impossible to follow the child in those situations. But in this situation that you've created and spearheaded, it's very much you're following the child. Now, do you? I want to be sure that we have told our listeners how they can help.
Well, there are a few different ways. We on the website there's a GoFundMe page, so they can they could support youth scholarship. That will go to youth scholarship through GoFundMe. At the Fair Trade store in Santa Rosa, Kindred on 4th Street, Julie has kind of taken us under her wing, and she's going to do kind of a shopping week, I think, and it starts on April 22nd, and we're going to have like an evening there where the kids will be there to talk about their experiences to anybody who wants to come and hear them speak. And it's really nice to hear it right out of their mouths. And Kindred and Julie are doing great things around, you know, fair trade in the world and pushing that movement. And she, you know, very much supports us in the work that we're doing. And so it's a very sweet partnership. So that's another way to support us. People can always come on a trip if they're interested. My contact information is on that website of www.transformative-travel.org, but I'm also accessible at Maestra Krista, because I'm a bilingual teacher, so maestrakrista at yahoo.com, and I would love to talk to people further about interest in participating or scholarships or, Can I tell you a quick story about Kathy Morris and how she supported us last year?
Absolutely.
Okay, so there's a student who had traveled with us for 2 years, actually. His name is Pablo, and he is a single mom. And he, in October of, not this past year, but the year before, somebody came into his home in Sonoma and stabbed him.
Oh, dear.
In the stomach. Yeah, and it was a very traumatic experience for him, and he, you know, there's a whole bunch of details, but in the end he felt not supported by the police department and not supported by the school system and just kind of not important, not valued. And he went from being an AP student, so in all advanced classes, to failing many classes. And his mom said he really couldn't go back to El Salvador the next year for a few reasons. One, because she quit her job because she was working in San Francisco at the time of the stabbing, and she couldn't be that far away. It was too hard for her to be that far away from her son. And and two, because he needed to take summer school classes because he was failing. And so I talked to his mom and said, you know, it, just taking more classes at this point with all of the, you know, brokenheartedness that he has is not going to help him. He needs to heal his heart. And he's a kid who talks about, you know, I am Mexican by blood, American by birth, and Salvadorian by heart. Mm-hmm. And so he is beloved and in El Salvador and so important to the community. And I was talking to Kathy about, you know, how I really wanted Pablo to be able to get back to El Salvador and how important it was going to be for him to be there and how, you know, it was going to be hard, you know, how I left a lot of cookie sales. And she paid for his trip. She paid $2,500 for him to go. And he really was the heart of making this past trip this summer the most powerful transformative experience that I've probably ever experienced, and certainly than that those kids had ever experienced. And I'll tell you why. The boys were all in kind of a shared room with, it had three different rooms, and they were all just kind of hanging out. There were seven boys, six of whom were Latino, and they were all just kind of making fun of one another and ripping on each other, ripping on different people. And Pablo said, hey, you guys, let's do this differently. Let's shift this. And he told the story of his stabbing, and he told the story of his heartbreak around that. And he talked about having written a suicide note and when he decided not to follow through on that suicide note and when he burned the note. And the kids, the boys, and these were 12 to 17 year old boys, every single one came to me the next day and said, we had boys bonding last night. It was the most important day of my life. It was so powerful. We all cried and we all shared our stories. And, you know, and they literally, the boys all moved their beds from one room into a long row in one of the rooms. And for the rest of the 2 weeks, they all slept, you know, side by side in this long bed that they created. And they talked about redefining strength, especially for Latino boys, but for boys in our culture, it's about how tough you are and how nothing can affect you. But they said, maybe it's about how much you love. Maybe it's about how open your heart is and how much you care about one another. And they really talked about just shifting. They shifted the culture of the group, and they shifted the culture of, you know, these seven boys, but of the whole group, and then of the youth in Las Trincheras and the openness and open heart sharing that happened among the youth. And our last day in that community, the kids were all crying. They were all crying and saying, you know, you're my family. You'll always be part of my family. And I have videos of them saying goodbye to one another. Kids from here speaking in Spanish and saying goodbye and crying and saying, you know, you will always be part of my heart. And it's just, it's phenomenal. And I, this is what's possible.
Isn't that, it's just so, what an inspiring story. I just am so happy that you told us this story and that it's part of this interview. I couldn't be happier. Thank you so very much for that, Krista McAtee.
Yes,
wow,
absolutely.
Wow. I, this interview, I've been looking forward to it since we made the contact, and the more that I have looked at the website, the more that I read about your biography, I'm so grateful to the universe that you are in it and that you are doing the work that you are doing.
Yeah,
it's just fabulous. Is there anything you'd like to leave with our listeners before we say goodbye?
I guess the big thing for me is that there are just thousands of ways to do this, to just open hearts and to provide opportunities for each of us to recognize the love that we are and the love that we have to share. And to, I am super grateful for, you know, having the time to talk with you and to share these stories that I think are, you know, the stories about youth and what's possible that sometimes we don't get to hear as often. It takes so many people doing so much to make this possible. I can't even, and there's so many pieces to it. It's just unbelievable. But everybody helps create, you know, like what Pablo did. Everybody contributes to that, you know, that shift in consciousness.
Yes, the shift in consciousness is truly what it is. And finding, you know, compassion, empathy, mm-hmm. and that love that just transcends everything. You know, establishing that when a person is young is so very, very important. And it's, I had a student who has gone through quite a lot of health issues say to me very recently, "I am so grateful that from a toddler at through, you know, high school, I learned meditation. Mm-hmm. I learned the value of meditation because through all of this, that's what got me through." Right. And it just meant the world to me. Yes. So thank you so much, Krista, for taking the time. Thank your family and especially your mom for sharing you with me today. This morning, we're recording this. I want our listeners to know on the 11th of March, and I'll be posting it in a few short days.
Wonderful.
So just
thank you.
I hope the universe will always be with you and the work that you're doing.
Thank you, and also with you. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
You, who are on the road, must have a code that you can live by. And so, become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by. And feed them on your dreams. The one they picked, the one you know.